So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight.
Listen to review, man.
The battery's not done again. It's stalled on.
The Rock is trapped inside the cage. The Rock is trapped inside the cage with Stone Cold Steve Austin, a merciless Spanish rattlesnake, and the chairman of the board of the WWF, Mr. McMahon.
Here comes the game. Who was pathetically perverted.
This is history. We have witnessed history here tonight. Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H, and Mr. McMahon have all come together tonight.
I cannot believe this. The rattlesnake, the game, and the boss are one vile, ugly, nasty page. And what can we do about it?
Waiting. What a WrestleMania. I couldn't believe it.
Did you think they would put that on last?
I thought they wouldn't, but hey, they did it, and look how it came across.
Yep, and the streak. The streak.
Wow. Well, yeah, what can you say?
It's historical, if nothing else.
Yeah, no matter what, I think people will be talking about it.
And Snooki.
Oh, boy.
Yikes.
Yikes is right. What a great match that was.
Great match.
It was fantastic.
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. First of all, I want to thank everybody because you have listened to us like every single day since last Monday. Hopefully some of you have. I totally understand if you haven't. But thank you. I had a ton of fun last week doing all those shows with you, Wei. Mm-hmm. It was awesome to do each day, get a lot of feedback from people, and we got some very interesting guests on, a wide range of them.
Yeah, I want to commend you, John, on the great job that you did, gathering all the guests that you did, coming up with all the great conversation over the past.
Well, Wei, it takes two people to have a conversation.
Okay, well, you can congratulate me.
Congratulations, Wei. And thank you for, I know how busy you are, and to dedicate your time is commendable.
No, it was a lot of fun. We want to thank everybody on the Facebook group and who sends emails for your participation.
Yes.
A lot of fun. And I think a lot of interesting topics.
Now, a quick programming note for everybody. We are going to be back later this week with a review of Raw. But me and Wei, after last week, we're going on vacation separately. They're work vacations where we will be working the entire time.
Yeah, what are you saying? We're not taking vacations at all.
I'm just saying we're not going to be around for Review and Impact this week.
We're going to be out of town both individually for other assignments at the Fight Network.
You clearly win because you're going to Montreal. I'm going to Windsor.
Yes.
I lost that one.
Yeah, you did.
But anyway, we will not be around. It's just not feasible for us. A, I'm not going to get to see Impact, and B, we are not going to be together to do the show. So we're going to take a Friday off. We've put quite a lot out in the last week. However, to make it up to everyone, when we return the following week with Review and Impact, I have confirmed this, Nate Milton.
Nate
is coming
Milton?
To Review and Impact.
Jesus.
So mark it on your calendar a week from this Friday when we return with Review and Impact. We'll call it the
April 8th.
April the 8th, everybody. We will be back. No, that's the Monday. That's the Friday we'll miss.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
So it will be April the 15th.
April the 15th.
Nate Milton.
4/15/11.
You love the dates, don't you? Marketing.
We're talking about TNA.
It is. We are. So Nate's going to join us. I'm very
TN Nate.
TN8 was the best nickname anyone came up.
As you guys call
TN8. I can't wait. I've always wanted to chat with Nate Milton, and we're very much looking forward to it. So mark that on your calendar, 4/15/11. He's going to be chatting with us. But right now, Wei, we're going to be getting into our review this week. Last week, we chatted about WrestleMania 17, arguably the greatest WrestleMania of all time, from the Reliant Astrodome in Houston, Texas, 2001. And we thought this week we would take a look at Raw the next night on April the 2nd of 2001 from Fort Worth, Texas, coming off perhaps the biggest angle they shot during the Attitude Era. I mean, this was turned out to be a game changer for the WWE, because they really hit a peak at WrestleMania. They turned Steve Austin heel, and this was the first night presenting Steve Austin as a heel.
Yes, it was. This was the first night where they had to solidify the heel turn. And traditionally, the Raw after a WrestleMania, many people consider to be the season premiere of pro wrestling.
Yes. So.
And so here we got to see what they premiered. I don't know.
Very hot crowd, first of all, here in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yes. Yes. It seemed just as hot as the night before, but in a smaller building.
Jim Ross and Paul Heyman are your announcers. Jim Ross was the star of this show. I thought he was phenomenal.
I thought he was great, and I thought Paul Heyman is great.
Ross starts off the show recapping WrestleMania and asking why. Why, Steve, why? Mm-hmm. Why did he do this? And the show starts off, I thought Triple H was coming out, but no, it's Stephanie McMahon to Triple H's old theme song.
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie kicks off the season premiere of Raw and is carrying a belt, a strap, and says that Trish Stratus had the audacity to slap Vince McMahon at WrestleMania and is disgusted. And she says, payback's a bitch, and is going to kick and whip Trish's ass, and has been granted a whipping match with Trish tonight, and then she introduces Vince McMahon. Not a strap match, Wei, a whipping match.
Mm-hmm. A whipping match. It's fine.
Vince comes out with a big gift, a big box.
A big box gift wrapped, yes.
And Ross is noting here that he just hopes that the Steve Austin turn was just a bad dream, which was a shoot comment 6 months later. Stephanie exits the ring as Vince stays, and he says he will have the privilege of handing the WWF title to Steve Austin tonight when he arrives. He brings up Trish turning, Linda kicking him in the gonads, and then brings up Foley attacking him as well in the street fight with Shane at WrestleMania.
Pretty much recaps the entire match.
Just in case you missed it.
Yes.
Huge chance of Foley here when Mick Foley is brought up. He then recaps Shane McMahon delivering the Van Terminator. It was like play-by-play here.
Yeah.
And he says he had a bad night, but it ended well with Austin and him celebrating to end WrestleMania. Then he says he went back to listen to the play-by-play, and he asks Jim Ross, right to his face at the announce table, did you call Austin an SOB? And Ross says, no, I did not. And then Vince says, did you say that he sold out to the devil? And Ross says, yes, I did. And Vince gets back in the ring, giant chance of asshole. And Vince says he's not the devil, but both are very powerful, and says that, and he basically rags on Texas here, saying that you were all behind Austin, and that the fans chipped in to buy Vince a present, and he reveals a cowboy hat. And then he goes on to make fun of Texans by putting this hat on. He does an accent, just completely makes fun of them all. Mm-hmm. And then he stomps on this hat, saying, that's what I think about Texas.
The crowd really reacted to this.
They were disgusted at this beautiful cowboy hat being desecrated and unusable. That's a no-no in Texas, to step
on a
hat.
To stomp on a cat? Is that a big deal, really?
Well, step on a hat or a cat. You shouldn't do.
Is it like burning the flag? Is it
it's
something
probably
like that?
Worse.
Oh, wow.
The Rock's music hits. Vince has the big gulp of fear. And Rock demands a rematch with Steve Austin tonight. And he says, in Texas. Vince says no. Rock comes to the ring, demands Vince change his mind. Vince is cut off with a punch. Then Rock puts him in the sharpshooter. Vince is tapping, and Vince gives the rematch. But then Vince announces it's going to be a steel cage match as Rock grins.
This is an interesting way to make somebody say yes. Just assault him until he says yes.
Yep.
Just force it. It works, clearly.
I was just dreading them tilting the camera up to show a cage above the ring. It would have been so stupid, but they actually didn't have the cage above. I always hate when they do that now, where they announce an impromptu cage match, and, hey, look at that, we have one hanging above.
Yeah. I mean, that's something for the live crowd. You definitely can't trick them. Sure.
We go to our first match of the night. It's a six-man tag with Eddie Guerrero, the new European champion, teaming with Dean Malenko and Perry Saturn, who comes out with Terry, taking on Test and the APA. And Test comes out to an extremely hot crowd, and Eddie cuts off Test's music and mocks him for losing the title at WrestleMania and also missing some friends, and that's when Test just grins at him and the APA comes out. So Test is a loner who has hired help, muscle, for this tag match.
Yes. This was just a continuation from the match at Mania, and I think it was clear from this point that Eddie was the lone person of the Radicals to get a push. Really, Dean and Saturn by this point were just accessories.
The APA, they hit a neck breaker to Saturn. Saturn comes back with a flapjack to Farouk. Bradshaw hits an overhead slam to Malenko and then Guerrero. Saturn cuts off Bradshaw with a suplex. And then Saturn makes a tag to Eddie as Bradshaw delivers the hot tag to Test. Big chance of Eddie sucks here. We see a gut-wrench powerbomb for a two by Test to Guerrero. And then we get Way's favorite maneuver, the moss-covered three-handled family Gradunzo by Saturn to Test.
Which I've since found out from various people, including some members of our Facebook group, that is a reference to The Cat in the Hat. And The Cat in the Hat animated movie, actually.
Never saw it.
Me neither.
Never a Dr. Seuss fan. Thought those books were just stupid. We get... the woman, Terry, gets on the apron.
Yes.
Test just grabs her. Grabs her and pulls her into the ring and goes to deliver a pump handle slam. The baby face to the heel. Perry Saturn, the heel, saves the woman in distress. And then takes a big boot by Test, and Test pins Saturn. Quite a different culture here in the WWF, where if a woman got involved, the babyface would just beat the shit out of the woman.
Hold on, but she's a huge bitch that deserves to
be... How is she being a bitch? She was getting on the apron. She wasn't even technically involved in the match.
She was probably a bitch earlier in the previous weeks.
Maybe.
Anyway, I thought the finish was nice and exciting. And
they were really into Test here.
They were.
Heyman says that if he was Saturn, he would have let Terry take the beating.
Yes, he also says that this was proof positive that chivalry will bite you in the ass every time.
Poor Saturn. William Regal's in his office backstage, and he's talking to his mother about Chris Jericho on the phone. I love that. Stephanie walks in, and she wants to assure that Trish cannot weasel out of the whipping match, and Regal asks if she wants to go through with it. And Stephanie says yes and starts whipping the floor, whipping the desk, and says she wants to make Trish squeal like the pig that she is.
Oh, boy. What did you think of Stephanie?
I never enjoyed her acting. I never enjoyed her promos.
No.
And it's not even like, oh, she's being a good heel. No, I didn't. I love Vicky Guerrero's promos. I think she's awesome. Stephanie, I never really got into as a heel. I found it was so forced and just...
I agree with you.
Just like nails on a chalkboard, I want to hit my mute button.
Hearing all these stories about, what Stephanie McMahon is like from, all these podcasts coming out with, former writers, just hearing all these stories about Stephanie and how she treats some of the people, she really scares me.
Yeah, I mean...
She is just a scary figure.
Hearing all these stories come out about Stephanie, she just seems like a... Not a fun person to work with. I don't want to say a horrible person, because some people have said, great things about Stephanie, but it just seems that, I don't know what it is, but just some of the stories about some of the writers who would, use terms that the workers would use, and Stephanie scolding them over it. It's really?
She instills the same fear in me that the principal used to instill in me when I was 8.
Did you have problems with your principal? Did you get into trouble a lot?
Yeah.
In elementary school, I got into a lot of detentions and shit like that.
I did too, actually. Yeah. Or what happened to you?
There was one time when I was in grade 5, and I was coming up the steps, and my class was on the second floor, and it was the staircase. I came up, and it was in the winter when everyone would take their boots off and leave them in the hallway.
Mm-hmm.
And I took someone's boots and I threw them over the staircase.
Why?
As the teacher was walking up, and I didn't see the teacher, and it boots fell on her. So I did what any 10-year-old would do. I sprinted back to my classroom and just sat down. But the teacher had seen me out of like the corner of her eye as I threw them over. And she hunted down to the classroom, walked in. And I'm just like, I'm trying to like no-sell it. I'm just like looking down. She's like, John Pollock, get up here now. That was just one instance. I had to go to detention for that.
Why did you do that? Why did you toss boots off the stairs?
I was I don't want to say I was, you know, a troublesome kid. I just did stuff for whatever reason and typically got caught for it. Wow. There was another time. Here's another story, okay? Right. And this one I never understood. It was during recess one day, and we're over by this yard, and there was like one of those little fences to go over where our front lawn was, and it was right on the busy street or whatever, and you weren't supposed to climb over this fence. And for whatever reason, some girl in our class was in tears, just crying, and I was like 9 at the time. So for whatever reason, me thinking that this would cheer her up, I jumped over the fence and said, "Look," and she started laughing. I thought I got her to stop crying. Whatever was bothering her was okay.
Sounds
climbed
noble.
Back. What did this girl do? She went to the fucking teacher and told on me. So later that afternoon, while our whole class went to the grocery store to buy a pumpkin for our Halloween decoration, I had to stay back and write out lines because this girl felt the need to go tell a teacher on me.
Wow, this bitch. What was she doing? Why was she outside of the fence?
She was on the right side.
She was on the right side.
And I
climbed
over
to, to cheer her up. Oh, I see.
So at the next recess, I grabbed her and gave her a pump handle slam.
And then you were booted in
and
the
I
face.
Said, chivalry bit you in the ass. All right, enough stories. Hey, you didn't share a story. Come on.
That explains so much.
You gotta tell some people a story about you.
I don't have any stories like that. I was just always late. I have a real tardiness problem.
That has continued.
I still do to this day. I would get into fights occasionally.
You got into fights?
Yes.
Did you win?
I don't know if there are ever any winners or losers. You would just kind of
on the 10-point must system. Like, would you get a 10-9 or were you?
I don't know.
You never were the victim of a 10-8, were you?
No, I would never like that. But I would say, I always fought dudes that were out of my weight class. So
bigger or smaller?
Bigger.
Okay. So you are small. I can't imagine people being smaller than you.
So I don't know. There weren't judges around. I personally think I won, but who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, I got into trouble for those.
Waiting. At least you went on a natural path.
Yes. Graduated now.
How did we get onto this?
I don't know.
Okay. Heyman talks about the whipping match tonight and wants to rub the wounds of the loser later tonight. They recap some of the new champions crowned at WrestleMania. And then Vince walks into Regal's office and wants to know that Regal knows what to do tonight in the whipping match. Very vague, but Regal apparently understood whatever this meant.
No, I didn't think it was that vague.
You understand what you need to do.
He's just telling him you better rig this.
Okay. Triple H arrives backstage, and Michael Cole asks about his loss to The Undertaker. And Triple H says, "How many days of the year are there in a year?" And Michael Cole says, 365. And Hunter says, "For 364 days, I've been kicking everyone's ass, and I give credit to The Undertaker. He says he would beat me, and he did, and I loved every second of it, and can't wait to get in the ring again. And the next time, the outcome won't be the same." Great.
Okay, so their program will continue, right?
10 years later. Then he's asked if he knew anything about Vince working with Austin, and Hunter ends with, "What did you think?" And he walks off. Then we go to an interesting backstage segment where it was this low-angle shot looking up at the RTC members, and they did a full, like, 360-degree turn on all the members.
This was like, you know, like that 70s show when they would smoke
but like
pot.
A lower angle on the subjects.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, something different. And they looked very menacing here.
These guys look like a group of Jehovah's Witnesses. That's what they were dressed like.
We had Steven Richards, Bull Buchanan, Ivory Valvinus, and the Good Father. They were all losers in their matches at WrestleMania. and said they're going to redeem themselves by taking the title they despise tonight, the hardcore title that Kane holds.
Yes, they hate it.
And next up, we have the whipping match, way. Stephanie McMahon and Trish Stratus. And it starts with Stephanie tackling Trish on the ramp as they roll down. Trish then throws Stephanie into, like, the bottom of the curtain at the side of the ring. Stephanie was having a lot of trouble here with her balance while on offense. She choked Trish with her strap, then climbed the turnbuckle and yanks on Trish from the second rope and tries to lift Trish by the throat. Stephanie hits a DDT, and then she proceeds to whip Trish.
These weren't light whips. These looked like heavy whips.
They were whipping the shit out of each other. Then Trish was able to kick out of this and kicked Stephanie in the face. She mounted Stephanie and then bangs her head into the mat. Trish hit a bulldog, and then she whips Stephanie. They fight into the announce table on the floor, and Stephanie uses Lillian Garcia as a shield and throws Lillian into Trish. Stephanie's in control as both are using the straps. She climbs to the second rope, but then her leg is pulled out from under her. And then Regal comes down and delivers his new finish to Trish.
The Regal Cutter.
The Regal Cutter. Is that what it was called?
That's what some people call it.
Well, I think Jim Ross called it perfectly by saying, "What the hell was that?" Trish took a way too early bump here.
Yes.
And this looked horrible.
Yeah, it did.
So Trish is on the ground. Regal and Stephanie double team Trish.
So when Vince said, "You know what to do," this is what he meant.
Yes.
"You're going to go out there and beat up this woman, right?"
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of that at this time period.
Why didn't he just say that? I thought there'd be some subtlety to this run-in.
No.
Vince could have just said, "You should go out there and beat this woman."
Well, Stephanie whips Trish in the stomach, and then Chris Jericho runs in for the save, throws out Regal, and then chases off Stephanie. And that's how this segment ends. Stephanie and Trish, actually, a few months before this, they had a match on pay-per-view that everyone thought was going to be just horrible. And it ended up being way better than anyone expected. This match, not so much.
Yeah, but the crowd was really hot from start to finish for these two. And the whipping really saved them because it looked legit.
Backstage after the break, Stephanie is irate at Regal for Chris Jericho ruining the match. And I don't think Jericho ruined that match. And Regal announces a handicap match with Jericho against Regal and Kurt Angle. And Regal says, "I will take care of it tonight." They're going to take care of Jericho.
Uh-huh.
Next up, Crash Holly against Rhino. They announced that all the members from TLC 2 are not at Raw tonight, nursing their injuries from the night prior.
Which is good. Good. They gave them a night off.
That's great. It was nice of them. Rhino misses a gore in the corner. Then Rhino no-sells a top rope drop kick by Crash as he gets right back to his feet and gores Crash Holly for the win. This lasted no time.
Mm-hmm. It was really just designed to get Rhino over. He had just debuted like 2 weeks earlier.
If there was one consistent theme to the show, it continued here. Because Molly ran in and she jumped off the top rope with the Molly go-round and took Rhino off his feet. And Rhino gets right back up and then murdered Molly with a gore. The back of her head almost snapped off the bottom turnbuckle. This was the third woman laid out on this show by a man.
Yes.
This was a little excessive, I found. TSN, what did TSN even air on this night?
I don't know. You're right.
It's just crowd shots.
Jesus.
Kevin Kelly is backstage with Deborah and gave her a stunner and then asked about Vince assisting Austin. And Deborah says that she was just as surprised and cannot talk about whether she knew about it, meaning that she probably wasn't that surprised. Deborah was horrible.
She sucked. I was so glad she was off of that pay-per-view.
Vince McMahon comes out, and he's holding the WWF title. He questions why the fans would turn on Austin after all that he has done just because Austin shook Vince's hand. Says that Austin didn't do anything the fans don't do on a daily basis, and that everyone, with the exception of himself, has a boss, and they suck up to their bosses and kiss their asses. Steve Austin comes out to a mixed reaction. Heyman is goading Ross here, and Ross ends up telling Heyman to kiss his ass. There's a great little rivalry between Ross and Heyman. You mm-hmm. really got the impression these two did not like each other. I thought they had such a great chemistry
yeah,
together.
I loved it. I loved it.
Vince hands over the title to Austin, who poses on the turnbuckles. He's booed. And then Austin grabs the mic and says, "Now that I've got what I've got, now that I've got what I want from WrestleMania," and has Vince all by himself in the ring, he asks the fans if he wants him to beat his ass, and he teases a babyface turn, but ends up saying, "Well, it's not going to happen tonight." He says the fans are parasites, and he's going to explain slowly for the people in Texas. He yells at this one fan in the front row, "Shut up, you little bastard," and then says he doesn't owe an explanation, which translates to, "We don't have a booking reason as of right now for this heel turn." Mm. And he ends up cutting a promo on The Rock, putting Vince in the sharpshooter, and in return, he's going to beat Rock tonight in the main event. And it ends with Vince saying, "And that's the bottom line, because Vince McMahon said so." The crowd was much more anti-Austin tonight than they were the night prior.
I felt their hearts break. They so badly didn't want to dislike this guy, and I think there was still some hope in this crowd that Austin would, you know, deep down inside, maybe turn on McMahon here, but nope. Solidified the heel turn. Their hero. Gone.
They come back, and Jim Ross is disgusted and says that Triple H must not have been in on any of this. And then Heyman says that Texas sucks for booing Steve Austin. Up next, it's the hardcore title match. Kane defending against Val Venus, who's accompanied by Steven Richards. They state that Big Show and Raven are nursing their injuries from WrestleMania. Ross says that the RTC are trying to push their right or left wing agenda. So they didn't want to make either political side the heels here.
Okay.
It's all Kane to start here. Venus tries to fight back and getting off the shoulders of Kane and runs into a slam by Kane. Richards runs in and takes a big boot and then a garbage can shot to the head by Kane. Venus then hits Kane with a garbage can to the head. Kane's thrown into the steps. There's a DDT delivered to Kane back in the ring. He gets a two count. The storyline here is that RTC, they want to win this title so they can retire it.
Hmm.
Great. Kane fights back, gets a bit of a reaction, blocks a Russian leg sweep. Then Val Venus is Irish whipped into the turnbuckle with the garbage can lodged in and then takes the top rope clothesline from Kane, and Kane gets the pin here to win. After the match, Bull Buchanan and the Goodfather attack Kane, along with Richards, and then The Undertaker makes the save. They fight off the RTC, ending with dual choke slams by Taker and Kane. And Kane's music hits, and as the pyro goes off, they transition into Limp Bizkit. And Heyman asks if anyone can step up to the Brothers of Destruction, and they were definitely pushing Undertaker and Kane here as top performers, and obviously getting ready for something big.
Yes, and they would go on to win the tag team titles from, Edge and Christian? The team that won that TLC match.
And then would lose it, within 2 weeks? They'd lose the titles.
To Austin and Hunter.
Great.
Yes. But, man, this RTC gimmick, Jesus Christ.
Not a fan.
Totally killed Val Venus and totally killed the Godfather.
The Good Father.
Where were they after this? Nowhere. Chief Morley.
The Godfather would, remember he did that gimmick for a while where he had gone legit and was doing a,
Like a tamed down. He didn't have hoes, he had like escorts.
Service he ran. He had gone legit.
Anyway.
Hunter is backstage and approaches William Regal and asks for Vince and calls him the man that screwed me over and demands to know where Vince is. Regal knows that he will kick his ass. And Regal ends up telling him where Vince is. Hunter just played like the stereotypical wrestler here.
He played a stereotypical bully. That's all he was.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop looking at his jacket.
Oh.
No, I was going to say his jacket. He had like a leather jacket with a denim vest over top.
Yeah,
a
very appealing look if you lived in 1986.
It made him look like three times as
with
big.
With his leather, like, Kangol-style hat.
Oh, my God.
Remember when those things are in style? Neither do I. So then we cut to Hunter finding Vince and wants to know what's going on. And Hunter nearly screws up his wording here. Let's listen for some embarrassment.
Don't tell me easy.
Hey!
Don't tell me easy. You're going to keep me in the dark on things, huh? You want to let me not know what's going on when stuff like this... God, Vince!
Now, the kicker here was that Vince was getting some coffee. Apparently takes it black, just like Claudio. And Hunter is pissed. He swoops his hand across and knocks the coffee out of Vince's hand. That could have potentially burnt his hand terribly. What a dumb thing to do if you're Triple H.
What a waste of coffee.
He would no-sell coffee, though. He wouldn't put it over.
Slaps.
He would have more heat than the coffee.
Oh,
anyway, Hunter's pissed about fighting off Austin for the last 2 years and not being clued into this alliance. Vince says he didn't feel it was any of Hunter's business at the time, and Hunter didn't ask for help. Austin did, and Austin was a winner at WrestleMania while Hunter was a loser.
Mm-hmm.
Go to our handicap match.
Hold on a second. To close off that segment, Vince leaves, and Hunter tosses over a bowl of sugar packets on the table.
What?
I missed this. He just flipped the bowl of sugar packets over. Just so he could make somebody clean that up.
What an asshole. There was the hint for the closing angle. A heel.
He flips over sugar. But what was the point of all these skits of Hunter going around backstage?
Oh, it was teasing he's a babyface.
I understand, but is he, from a storyline perspective, from the character's perspective, is he just faking all this? Does he actually not know? Did he actually not know about the Austin heel turn? Or was this just all for the cameras?
Probably all for the cameras.
Okay, so then he's acknowledging that he hired this camera crew. He's acknowledging that there's a camera crew around following him as he's doing all this stuff.
Sure.
Oh, okay. Fine.
Anyway. We go to the handicap match. It's William Regal and Kurt Angle against Chris Jericho. They note the welts on the chest of Regal from WrestleMania. And Jericho starts with Regal. We see a springboard dropkick that knocks Regal to the floor. Jericho counters the ankle lock and gets the walls of Jericho onto Kurt Angle, but it's broken up by Regal. Regal works over the left arm of Jericho. Jericho comes back with a spin kick after an Irish whip reversal and knocks Angle off the apron and then hits a faceplant and lion salt, but Angle breaks up the pinfall attempt. Jericho then goes to the top rope, but Angle pulls out his leg, and it leads to Regal hitting a double underhook suplex for a two count on Jericho. Angle comes in, hits the Angle slam, but tags in Regal to come in and get the count, but he only gets a two. And then Regal delivers knees to the face of Jericho. He's thrown into the ropes, and Angle hits Jericho with a chair to the back, and Jericho walks into Regal, who hits the Regal cutter and gets the win over Chris Jericho. Mm-hmm. And the post-match beatdown continues with Angle and Regal attacking Jericho. Angle puts Jericho in the ankle lock, and Jericho taps out. And then Chris Benoit, who's identified as Chris Jericho by Jim Ross but corrects himself, fights off Regal and Angle. They have this awkward stare between Benoit and Jericho, who are reluctant partners here, and fighting for a common cause in Kurt Angle and William Regal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a very good match. Enjoyed it. And the alliance between these two rivals in Benoit and Jericho is established.
They show Shane McMahon arriving in a limo at WWF New York over an hour into the show. And then we go to a match that was not good, Way. The one Billy Gunn. Against X-Pac, who was accompanied by Albert and Just Incredible. And as bad as you hated that Uncle Cracker theme, whatever they were using here was way worse.
No, I don't think it was way worse.
The lyrics consisted of, yo, yo.
You dealing with the X-Factor.
No, I don't think they even had that in there.
Really?
It was just...
It's just a rap?
You gotta remember, Just Incredible had just come in like a few weeks ago. They had just been paired together and they had this shit theme song. Yeah. This was horrible. Uncle Cracker was way better.
I don't know about that, but yes. It was all anything to do with X-Pac after maybe 2000 is shit, okay?
They show... The whole purpose of this match was that on SmackDown last week, Billy Gunn was talking to Shane McMahon backstage... At the show. And then...
They tease the defection to WCW.
Yes. So here, as they show that, they come back and Billy Gunn's in the ring watching this video, and the referee is giving Billy Gunn shit for talking to Shane McMahon.
Oh, really?
He's pointing at him as he looks up to the video. I would want a different referee for this match. Anyway, Heyman says that Shane owns that other group, and Ross just pipes in, yeah, WCW. Gunn hits a power slam. Credible is on the ground and goes for a super kick, but Gunn grabs his leg, and this allows X-Pac to hit a baseball slide as the heels get the advantage. Heyman says, what a great opportunity for X-Pac, live on TNN and TSN in Canada. Getting a shout-out here in the match. We see a Bronco Buster by X-Pac, and then Billy Gunn comes back with a tilt-a-whirl slam and then a series of clotheslines. There's a press slam by Gunn. He knocks Credible off the apron and hits the Famouser, but the ref is distracted, and then Alberto runs in, hits the Baldo Bomb, and X-Pac gets the win, and then there's a post-match attack on Gunn. It's 3-on-1 here as their horrible theme music plays them out. This match sucked.
It sucked. And it's funny to think, if this match had taken place in 1999, this place would have gone crazy. These two were both in DX. There's all this history there.
It was 3 years before this, the night after Mania, they formed that DX.
Exactly.
It was a huge angle. And here they are, three years later. One didn't even make it to WrestleMania, and the other is dancing with Albert.
Neither made it. Hold on, did either make it to WrestleMania?
Oh, X-Pac did a dark match on it, like the Sunday Night Heat match. I forgot. He wasn't on the pay-per-view.
Neither
either.
Made it to WrestleMania, and this here was just another match. Both guys completely lost from the shuffle.
We get more shots of Shane at WWF New York, and I'm wondering, why is he allowed here?
I never understood that.
Why was he backstage at SmackDown previous week?
Why was he at Raw, period? How is he allowed to be on at WrestleMania? How is he allowed to be anywhere?
Great questions. Anyway, they're setting up the cage for the main event. They recap the street fight at WrestleMania, which Vince already did. And then we go to Shane at WWF New York with a black eye. And he says that WrestleMania was awesome, but he's conflicted about his match with Vince, as it's unnatural for a father and son to fight, but proud of what he did. And there was an echo here in the WWF New York, where his words are like echoing here on the screen. There's a chant of WCW in the back. The only time I can ever remember a WCW chant.
Likewise. I wrote that down too. I cannot ever
It sounded
recall.
So awkward. WCW.
I could never recall fans just suddenly breaking out into a WCW chant.
I almost wonder if they were encouraging the audience. Like there were people working the crowd to get that chant. There's no way that chant organically starts amongst an audience.
I really don't think so either. It's like chanting. I remember there was an episode of Heat once, and Tommy Dreamer was wrestling, and fans were just, you know, as always, Tommy Dreamer comes out, they chant ECW, ECW. So Tommy Dreamer was trying to get everybody in the crowd to chant WWE.
How successful was that?
It did not work. Not one person echoed him.
Oh, my God. Shane, I thought his promo was horrible. Like, he visibly looked thrown when the fans started chanting WCW, and he tries to play off the audience, but is terrible, where he keeps doing his promo, and then when he gets to the part where he has to talk about WCW, he's like, and yeah, we're going to talk about WCW, but the chant had ended, 30 seconds before this. It just was awkward.
He is distracted by the crowd.
He had nothing to say here about WCW. He just left it with, stay tuned, things are going to get interested. Things are going to get interesting, which was a lie. And he says he hopes Linda kicks Vince somewhere worse than the gonads and hits him in the pocketbook.
So,
an unlikable babyface.
I know. I hope my babyface mother takes all the money that she didn't earn.
Michael Cole is with The Rock backstage. Rock says he knows why Austin turned, and that is because deep down he knows he cannot beat The Rock, because he kept kicking out at WrestleMania and is going to whip Austin's ass tonight around the Lone Star State.
Great promo from The Rock. I mean, everything you expect from him made me want to see him get revenge on Austin.
And that takes us to the main event of Raw, the night after WrestleMania, a rematch for the WWF title, Steve Austin defending against The Rock in a steel cage, and Austin comes out with Vince McMahon, who introduces Austin, and the two fight on the floor and around the announce table to start. Rock hits a low blow at the table and then hits Austin with the WWF title, and Austin is busted open before the match even starts.
So he does all these illegal things before the match begins.
The crowd here much more pro-Rock and anti-Austin here in Fort Worth. Mm-hmm. Rock tosses Austin face first into the cage at the floor, and then they finally make their way inside the ring. Crowd was just great here, I thought. Austin catapulted the Rock into the corner, then hit a spinebuster. Then Vince McMahon grabs a chair, opens the door, and hands it to Austin.
No subtlety at all.
Like, why is this door just accessible?
I don't know.
To open. The whole point of a cage match is to keep people out. This guy just opens the door and hands him a chair.
I know. The whole McMahon, this and the night before, McMahon's role as a manager with Austin here is really just pretty blatant. Just hand him a chair, hand him a belt, and attack him with it.
Not the most innovative heel characteristics presented here by the character of Steve Austin. We see Austin just attack Rock with chair shots, and then from there, we go to Rock recovering, and then he applies the sharpshooter to a huge pop, and Austin is tapping, but Vince is distracting the referee.
Yeah.
And the referee is also deaf. The referee comes back as Rock hits a spinebuster and then the people's elbow. Crowd was huge here behind the Rock, but Vince attacks the referee to stop the count. Then we get on the floor, and Tim White, who's the official, shoves Vince down to return to the ring. Austin is staggering to his feet and takes a Rock bottom, but again Vince attacks the referee to stop the count. I found this agitating, but the crowd loved this.
He might as well have run over him with a truck.
He was not losing this match. Great drama, I thought, though, created by Jim Ross. I mean, he was just doing a great call here for this match. Rock throws Vince into the corner, locks the cage door, which would have been a brilliant idea at the start of the match. And everyone's in the ring, and Rock beats down Vince. Austin comes back with a low blow to Rock as Rock is going for a Rock bottom onto Vince. Austin is attacking Rock. Then Vince takes out Tim White, and Triple H's music hits to a big, big pop, and he's coming down with a sledgehammer. He gets into the ring. They have a stare down, and in my opinion, what would happen next would determine the fate of this heel turn for Steve Austin, because everyone here was behind Hunter, but as Hunter stares at Austin, he turns and attacks Rock with the sledgehammer, continues with shots, kicks from Austin as they double-team the Rock. Rock is thrown into the cage. He takes a pedigree. Austin hits his elbow drop. There's a knee drop by Hunter. Hunter then lifts Rock for a stunner by Austin. Both are yelling in his face, and Ross says that this match has descended into the depths of hell. And Austin calls for a beer, and the show ends with Austin, Hunter, and Vince all celebrating with beer. No finish to the match. They never went for a pinfall here, because I guess they didn't want to beat the Rock again. But they just murdered him, and this was the last we would see of Rock until the summer.
Yes.
And the beginning of the two-man power trip, which is probably the most costly storyline of the last 15 years in company. No, that is not true. We have the Invasion. We have Goldberg. We have the NWO. There is lots, but this was one of them.
Yeah.
I personally think a big problem was that you had no babyface here, and I think Hunter could have slid into that babyface role at this time.
Wait, you think they could have done a double turn and had Hunter go babyface, full on babyface?
Yes.
I still don't know. I don't know if Hunter would have been a strong enough babyface to combat.
Would have been better than The Undertaker and Kane.
Yes, which is what they were hoping.
Like, they had nobody here, and Hunter was someone that was at least book strong. The fans were behind this guy because he wasn't some chicken shit heel. He was like this.
I didn't find him to be a likable guy though.
Either. I didn't think so either. But you heard the reaction when he came out. They thought he was coming out as a babyface.
Yeah. I mean, this crowd seemed like they would cheer anything, though. So, I don't know.
You were also coming off that February show where Hunter beat Austin in that 2 out of 3 falls match. Like, he would set the table perfectly here for a Hunter-Austin feud. But for whatever reason, they didn't go with it.
They didn't want to turn Hunter. They didn't want to turn.
Well, I thought that was a big, big mistake.
Yeah, because, like you said, there was a huge discrepancy on the babyface and the heel side. And that kind of... It didn't really do anything.
So that was the Raw the night after WrestleMania 17. I thought a good show. I wouldn't say a great show.
I was entertained.
I think it's hard to watch it as just a standalone show because you knew of just this was the start of so much falling apart for the company and where this stuff would lead to. So I'm going to give this a 4.5 out of 10.
I thought it was an entertaining show. This to me seemed like almost like a continuation of the WrestleMania from the night before. The heat was there. A lot of the dull matches, I would say, though. But it did feel like a special show.
It's a very hot crowd. I thought Jim Ross was great on this show.
I'll give this a 5.
All right. So there you go, everybody. That was our thoughts. And now we will get into some feedback here as we go through this. Let's start off with Daily Brennan. Watching Raw from 2001 really showed what we're missing out on today's version of the show. We had television matches that were longer than 90 seconds, not by much. The obligatory divas, an announced team that gelled really well and critically treated the show as a shoot. William Regal being used properly, the list goes on. Even the sillier angles were much more watchable. I'm thinking RTC. If anything made me uncomfortable, it was the unprotected headshots in the hardcore match and perhaps the Undertaker running down the ramp. Overall, a great Raw. I felt like I was watching a pay-per-view by today's standards. This is what people want to see. Why else would the ratings have gone up so much since The Rock and Steve Austin's returns?
Jim Machimio. I think WWE took the purchase of WCW for granted with this show. They assume the audience will gravitate over without offering any real change in programming to ease the transition. That's right. What's also significant about this show is that the first unopposed Raw. Showcasing former WCW talents in high-profile roles would have helped. Putting on a technical or high-flying wrestling match early in the show, or simply mentioning WCW more on the show, would have helped. At the time, I was fairly discomforted by how little they mentioned what was one of the biggest angles ever, a week after it happened. Okay. They probably weren't ready to tackle such a big storyline and wanted to leave it vague, but that storyline called for some quick thinking and some major rewriting, and they just did nothing out of the ordinary, as if the show was in the can 2 weeks before Mania. It was a good show, though, not going to rate a TV program, but it was solid for establishing the Austin heel turn and getting it over. I didn't even realize anything regarding WCW, really,
the
show.
There were so many questions at the time. Like, the company didn't know what they were doing at that point. Like, it was, the deal had just happened, 10 days earlier. So they still had no idea what was going to happen. And it was pretty much just, they weren't going to progress anything here until they knew what was happening. If they were going to have their own time slot for Nitro. Just a lot of stuff up in the air. Mm-hmm. Nate Milton. I remember WrestleMania 17 being a very good show from the opening match to the main event. This has to be one of the top in-ring cards that the WWE has ever produced. Sadly, I also remember this show as being the start of my last year actively watching the WWF/E. As a lifelong NWA WCW fan, I was hopeful that the WWE buyout would breathe some life into a once great promotion. But those hopes were ruined 6 months later as I watched the Travis Shamokery that was the invasion angle.
Yes, well, there you go.
Nate was not alone there of WCW fans that were pretty much driven off.
Greg Brown has some thoughts on WrestleMania 17. Taz got legitimately concussed in that six-man, which explains why he looked so out of it after about 90 seconds and wasn't really seen again throughout the match. I think a bad Bull Buchanan clothesline did the damage. I remember thinking even back in 01 that turning Austin heel was a terrible idea, especially when a crowd is still cheering you after beating the piss out of the babyface with a chair. I had no issue with Rock's superhuman kickouts in this match, but I did take issue with Rock turning up the next night on Raw, jumping into a steel cage. After the chair beatdown from Austin, he should have gone to do the Scorpion King and been off due to the injuries from the chair attack. I don't really disagree with him either, but I guess they want to just spike that rating.
Go to Greg Brown. That's the one you read. Brent Chittenden. There are at least two versions of Motorhead playing Triple H's theme live, and in neither of them does it sound like Lemmy knows the words.
William Stewart Young, great review away this week. I love how much insight you bring to every review. I had a comment about Austin's heel turn. I personally feel it made a lot of sense with the story of the match. Austin was quoted in an interview saying that he needed to beat The Rock, that he had to. Throughout the whole match, Austin was getting more and more desperate, so it makes sense that if this was his mindset going into the match, that he would go as far as to turn on to his greatest enemy, who could see that he wins the title no matter what. I always like that attention to the story, and Austin's heel run is a personal favorite of mine.
I don't think anyone complains about the logic of it all. I think it's more just the result it had on business. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many fans got into wrestling because of this feud. And you talk about, you know, just in terms of fans just believing in things and the context of, you know, certain feuds, that all of a sudden now you've kind of completely changed that. It's just, I don't know, it didn't connect with a lot of people, and it ended up with a lot of people tuning out of the product. I think there was a big combination of things with no more competition and with the Austin heel turn. It was just, I think a lot of people realized that their interest in wrestling was kind of dissipating at that point.
Yes. But me personally, I do have some criticism of the logic involved in the turn, because what exactly did Vince McMahon provide Austin? He was nothing more than a shitty manager who would blatantly hand objects to him into the ring. What else did he do?
Well, he was a...
Why did Austin have to go to Vince McMahon? Why didn't he just use
Vince made it a no-holds-barred match for him. He needed to go to Vince to get the match changed at the last minute to allow for all of this.
All right, fine.
That was it. That was the reason to squash a four-year feud.
Okay.
Jordan Ducharme, ugh, the Deborah part of that My Way video just kills it. It makes me so upset how much that portion of the video absolutely ruins it. How shitty and stupid.
That was just filling time, wasn't it?
We got 5 weeks till WrestleMania. How can we stretch this out? Deborah.
Deborah. Kevin Waters, the Austin heel turn didn't make sense on a number of levels. We had this badass that did things on his own, didn't trust anyone, and would never ask for help. This man we had seen since summer of 96 doing this 180? Sure, Vince, you screwed me over countless of times, but I think I need your help to beat The Rock. How about Vince? Well, Steve, you gave me a number of stunners countless times, gave me a beer bath, crashed a Zamboni into the ring, poured cement in my $100,000 car, and made me piss my pants in the ring. But I guess I'll help you out. Then we retreated to this badass playing a guitar and singing, married to a ditzy blonde, making sure the guys liked her cookies she baked, having a hug off with Angle, and arguing about plastic sheriff's badges.
That was some of the worst shit imaginable. I thought that stuff, more than anything, it hurt Austin and Angle so badly.
When
it got into the comedy shit, I was done.
Well, as a fan, I was very entertained by it, but did it make me want to see any of the matches Austin was involved in? No, not really.
That was like mid-card comedy for Steve Austin.
Yeah.
Well, it was just...
You could tell that they had fun doing it. I'm sure Austin and Angle had a lot of fun doing comedy. But yeah, it didn't really help business very much.
Ahmad Butt, just finished review away. The point about turning Cena heel and the lack of the top babyface replacement really made me think. Clearly, Orton cannot be that guy. They've tried for over a year now, and it hasn't clicked. It would have to be someone who recently joined the company in the last 4 to 5 years for it to gel, in my opinion. You've exhausted heel and face turns for anyone who's been there longer. I don't think anyone jumps out as someone that could even come close to the level of babyface Cena is right now.
Not at the moment, no. Davey Ziegler, as for the Cena heel turn, I have never been a fan of the idea, but recently I am reconsidering. Question is, does having Cena as a babyface get you extra merchandise sales, but at the expense of pay-per-view buys from the older people that are more likely to purchase pay-per-views? Depending on how much Rock will be involved post-Mania, turning Cena could be a good choice finally.
Well, you don't really have a permanent opponent in The Rock coming out of WrestleMania. Sorry. Secondly, I don't necessarily believe that just turning Cena is really going to give pay-per-view a big, you know, jolt either. Mm-hmm. I think pay-per-view is a bigger problem than just characters that are a babyface or a heel. I think there's a larger issue at hand than just simply, you know, we're going to turn a guy and pay-per-view is going to magically rebound itself.
Mm-hmm. Murphy... Sorry, is that...
Yeah, that's right.
No, wait, that's yours.
Okay. Murphy Shackelford, heel Cena is not needed. Badass Cena is what's needed. When people boo him, it's not because they want him as a heel. They boo him because he's booked like a Superman Boy Scout. Chances are heel Cena would be 50-50 still, because kids and women would hate him, and the 18 to 34 demographic would cheer him. But badass Cena would get people behind him, and merch sales wouldn't be affected by it.
Maybe that's right. Maybe that's true too. Do you think kids would cheer a badass John Cena?
I think they'd still be fans. to a degree.
I would think so, too.
I mean, teenagers, like when we were growing up, I mean, look at DX and how popular they were.
Yeah, I think so, too. But I guess we're talking about 7 and 8 year olds. Would they cheer as John Cena that said ass?
I don't know. I can't remember even anything when I was 7 years old. But I know, like, young teenagers, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's the answer. Just make him badass. Finally, from Sam Kennelly, John and Way, I've been listening to a lot of back episodes of Review Away, and I have a suggestion for a future review. The WWE Originals episode was hilarious. Have you ever thought about reviewing John Cena's rap CD, You Can't See Me, with such lyrical genius of, I like to fuck like a fiend with three dicks. Or even better, Macho Man Randy Savage's rap CD, Be a Man. Might make a nice change of pace from all the long WrestleManias you guys have been doing. And I've heard that the Macho Man album is particularly fantastic.
The Macho Man Randy Savage album is it's entertaining. I won't say it's great. But nonetheless, yeah, maybe in the future we'll do another musical review because the original CD was a lot of fun. So thank you, everybody, for your feedback, and thanks for all your support over the past week. WrestleMania week was a lot of fun, and this officially ends WrestleMania week. We're going to be back Tuesday with Review of Raw, and it's going to be a big edition, Way, because we're going to be chatting about Raw from the night after Mania, the WWE Hall of Fame, and the premiere of Tough Enough. Lots of stuff coming up Monday night if you're a wrestling fan.
All three of those things. Jesus.
Wow. Lots
of
stuff.
That's a lot, man.
It never ends.
Never.
So that will be when we chat with you next, everybody. You can always leave your feedback at the Live Audio Wrestling Review Away Facebook group and catch the shows at lawradio.podbean.com/feed and liveaudiowrestling.com. Next week, Way, what would you like to review?
The Fight Network has been airing Lockdown from TNA Wrestling.
Yes.
All five of the past five?
Yes, from 2005 through 2010.
That would be six.
With the exception of the 2007 version.
Oh, okay. So then all the number of TNA
five
Lockdown
of the six.
episodes. And I would love to review TNA Lockdown 2009, which is the episode that will be airing this weekend.
This Sunday at 5 Eastern, we're going to be airing the Lockdown event from 2009, which was the subject of Mick Foley's book.
Mm-hmm. And you can, of course, find it at the Fight Network, which is, for those of you who still don't know, I still get questions about it all the time. What is the Fight Network? Where can I watch all these preview shows that you guys are talking about? The Fight Network is a television station that is available here in Canada. It is where John and I work. We air combat sports, news, and related programming. So, TNA Lockdown on the Fight Network, channel 427 on Rogers, Bell, whatever. I don't know what it is. But
neither do I. But 427 on Rogers. So that's coming up Sunday at 5. You can watch it, and then just hours later, catch me and Way's review of it. So that
That'd
is coming
awesome.
Up. Other than that, we're going to finish off with a song, and let's end, Way, with
the number one song of our WrestleMania countdown.
That is it, the countdown. And this, I think, no one is going to dispute. To me, it is the song that I most associate with WrestleMania. Here we go.
You don't remember?
I know what it's called.
We talked about this last week.
Yeah, I know. I was just I was just gonna lead into it. You think you're special, you do. I can see it in your eyes. I can see it when you laugh at me. Look down on me and walk around on me. Just one more fight about your leadership, then I will straight up leave your shit. 'Cause I've had enough of this, and now I'm best. Yeah.
Saints, and I'll be history. Yes, I will straight up leave your shit, and you'll be the one who's left missing me.
Check out my man.